Welcome to That's History, our regular discussion of current events and echoes, parallels, and lessons from the past. I'm Chris Satullo, joined as always by Jonathan Zimmerman, professor of history at New York University. Welcome, Jonathan.
Good to be here as always.
Okay, we're going to talk about some familiar contested ground, although it's contested ground that also often waves up in the sky, flags, not the American flag, but the Confederate flag. We're fighting about the stars and bars again.
Yes, it's back in the news because the Sons of Confederate Veterans tried to get Texas to print a plate with the Confederate flag on it. And Texas, like many states, takes money from various private groups to make their plates. But they drew the line here and they said that this was an offensive symbol and they refused to print it. And these Confederate or neo-Confederate groups sued and it worked its way up to the Supreme Court, which heard the case on Monday.
So your preference, I believe, would be that they not ban this flag. But before we get into your reasons for that, let's cycle back to the history first. There are two flags and two designs for flags from the Confederacy, each of which crop up today in modern life and become the cause for argument and passion. But review a little bit sort of the history of the flags.
Yeah, you know, the original Confederate flag at the birth of the Confederacy was stripes and stars. There were stars in the corner in a circle representing each state and then alternating red and white stripes. And the problem with that was that lots of people criticized it as looking too much like the U.S. flag from which they had declared independence. And indeed, in the first big battle, which was at Manassas at Bull Run, P.T. Beauregard, who was the victorious Confederate general, complained because he said a lot of his troops couldn't recognize who was who, and we have at least one instance of a Confederate battalion firing on the other.
Right.
Because the flags look too alike.
Right. So in the fog of war, that didn't work. So then there was the design known to Civil War buffs as the Confederate or the Rebel battle flag, which looked distinctly different.
Yeah, or the so-called Southern Cross, which incidentally, when it first appears, we think it's an upright cross. And some members of the Confederacy, including Jews, complained that it was too religious, it was too Christian. And so they alternated on its axis.
Some arguments never go away, do they?
Exactly. Exactly.
Right. So in time, that design of the X with the stars inside it becomes part of the design of the official flag of the Confederacy, not just the
battle
flag.
Right. And they adopt the so-called stainless banner in 1863. And importantly, the stainless banner features this Southern cross on a field of, quote, pure white. And if our listeners are interested, they can go to hyy.org and look at the piece I wrote about this. And I quote the defense of this flag by somebody in Georgia saying, well, this shows that we're a white society and it shows that, you know, we're based on white supremacy.
So for a long period of time, use of this flag and these images in the South is not particularly controversial, though that could be more a statement about who got to govern the political conversation that decided what was controversial.
Precisely. I mean, you know, in the era of Jim Crow and segregation, it's not controversial because white supremacy isn't. It's in many ways the law of the land. And I think the most important historical fact about the controversy over the Confederate flag is it doesn't really become a controversy until the Civil Rights era, until white supremacy itself comes under fire.
And then as time goes on, and we've had a number of instances of this that crop up at regular intervals, perhaps the most hotly contested one over time was about the South Carolina situation and flying that flag over the Capitol. But the argument made by proponents of flying some version of the Stars and Bars or the battle flag over state capitol or including it in a state flag is that it is not about race or slavery. It is about Southern heritage and a pride in the past of the state where you live.
Right. And the problem with that argument is it ignores the history and the temporality of this. You know, you mentioned South Carolina and there are two other states, Alabama and Georgia, that also include versions of the Southern Cross on their flag. The really important historical point is they add this during the 1950s, right after Brown v. Board of Ed. And that's why the argument for heritage over race is specious. It doesn't take into account the whens and the whys of when all this occurs. The best analogy that I can find to all this is the addition of under God to the Pledge of Allegiance, which also happens in the 1950s. You know, people erroneously think we've always had under God in the pledge. That's false. We added in the 50s during the Cold War because it was a way of differentiating ourselves from the communists, the godless enemy. And in the same way, the use of the Confederate flag by white people in the South in the 1950s is explicitly a way to declare their resistance to integration and to racial justice. That's the history of the revival of the flag.
And so what was the result of the South Carolina argument over whether that flag should fly over the state?
Well, there was a compromise because we live in a democracy. And the compromise was they took it off the dome and they put it somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like in the garden somewhere.
Right. It's kind of like us moving the Rocky statue off the steps down to the
Not exactly, but I take your point.
So now, back to the Texas situation, the immediate day, the latest example of the passions raised by the Confederate flag. In your piece in Newsworks, you argue that you would prefer not to see that image banned from the license plate. What's your thinking there?
Well, you know, here's why. I do think it's probably unconstitutional. I think that Monday's argument indicated that a lot of justices agreed with me, because let's remember that Texas prints plates for, say, anti-abortion groups. And please understand that I'm not saying personally I find the anti-abortion plates as offensive as I do the Confederate flag, because personally I don't, but I can see how some people might. And as several of the justices said, offensiveness is a notoriously slender reed for, you know, discussing any of this. But I think, frankly, it's unwise, because I think it gives these neo-Confederate groups more credit and more attention than they deserve. It strikes me the best response is to create other plates that underline the cause of racial equality and justice without doing violence to our equally sacred tradition of free speech.
So as a Supreme Court justice, whose name eludes me right now, once said the cure for bad free speech is more and better free speech.
Yes, and Louis Brandeis said that sunlight is, you know, always the best disinfectant.
Right, exactly.
Right.
That's Jonathan Zimmerman, professor of history at New York University, and this has been That's History. Thank you, Jonathan.
Thanks. It was fun.